This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 170 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Rex Burkhead was put on IR this week. As many of you listeners know, I was probably higher than most on Rex Burkhead entering the year. And the reason for that was because even though we knew New England was going to have a split backfield, Burkhead was looking like the player who would see volume through the air, but also goal line touches in that offense. And as we know, the player who's played that role in the New England offense over the past few years has been a monster in fantasy football. And Burkhead was a monster himself last season when the Patriots decided to stop using Mike Gillisley, even when Deion Lewis was active too. We had a 5-game sample of both Lewis and Burkhead being active and playing significant snaps, and in that sample, Burkhead was 3rd in the NFL in goal line rushes, and he was averaging nearly 17 PPR points per game during this stretch. And all the while, Burkhead was the league leader last season in yards per route run at the running back position. Yes, Rex Burkhead had a better yards per route run rate last year than Alvin Kamara. So yeah, I think there was some upside with Rex Burkhead this year, even with Sony Michel entering the picture. Because Sony Michel could have easily played the Deion Lewis role, and Rex Burkhead could have still been absolutely fine from a fantasy perspective. Now, I'm not bringing all of this up to be defensive about my preseason Rex Burkhead love. I'm bringing it up because I'm growing tired of the reactions we see from fantasy owners and even fantasy football analysts in hindsight. I'm growing tired of the I told you so culture, even when the I told you so moment has literally nothing to do with actual performance. Let me just read you some of the responses I got stemming from this Rex Burkhead injury on Twitter. And I'm not doing this to put these people in the spotlight. I'm doing this because it's a great example of how humans don't think in a processed way when something super impactful happens. They think in a biased manner. One person wrote, "You should all know better than drafting a New England Patriots running back." I'm sorry, what? Were we supposed to know that Rex Burkhead was going to get concussed prior to a week 2 game and then sustain a neck injury in week 3? And then more people were talking about how Rex Burkhead was injury prone. Well, according to Injury Predictor, a site that might know a little bit more about how injury prone a player is than CoolGuy123 on Twitter, Burkhead was simply a medium risk for injury this year. Even if you're not a believer in that site, go ahead and look at Burkhead's injury history. He's had a chest injury and a knee injury. He's never had a documented neck injury in the league. And what's so hilarious about the injury proneness argument is that Sony Michel was dinged by multiple teams entering the NFL draft due to a bone-on-bone condition in his knee. And then he basically didn't play this summer because of a knee issue. Injury Predictor actually had him as a high-risk case. That's what's really bothering me about this Rex Burkhead thing. That's what's got me on tilt right now. If this was a talent argument, fine, that's one thing. Though I'd say that you're wrong if you think that Rex Burkhead isn't talented for a lot of reasons that I already talked about. But I feel you. I was pretty high on Sony Michel coming out, and I thought that he was a talented back as well. That's why I have him on multiple teams this year. Just don't come forward with this complete garbage injury proneness argument. Like, if you're going to talk down on a player after the fact, at least do it because of something he did on the field. Not because he had an injury that had nothing to do with previous injuries. Not because he got a concussion and hurt his neck and was limited as a result. Come at me or someone else for liking Chris Hogan this year. Chris Hogan has been awful. Chris Hogan is someone I completely whiffed on. Telling yourself the story that Burkhead was a bad pick because he was injury prone will hurt you in future decision making. Part of the reason that the entire Patriots offense hasn't been all that fantasy friendly, maybe aside from James White, is because the Patriots offense has gotten off to a really slow start. And when you're projecting a part-time player to be usable, you're doing so under the assumption that the offense that he's in won't be as bad as the Patriots have been. So from that standpoint, with the Patriots performing as poorly as they've performed, yeah, Rex Burkhead was a bad pick. Even if he was 100% healthy, he wouldn't be living up to his average draft position. But from the standpoint of him being injury prone, or that he's flat out bad now that it's convenient to say that, get that garbage out of here. We don't need more crappy narrative-filled analysis in the football world. Thanks for listening to that rant. I needed to get that off my chest. Today is indeed a mailbag show, but before answering your questions, I wanted to let you guys know that FanDuel has more ways to win this season, with one of those ways being their new free-to-enter Gridiron Pick'em. Just choose the winning teams for all Sunday's games with no spreads and compete for a chance to win $10,000 split amongst all the top pickers. $10,000 is up for grabs for free every week, so be sure to head over to FanDuel.com and check it out. This first question is from @GF91294. Thoughts on Sony Michel moving forward? Would you capitalize on his increased value and trade him away, or is he a viable option now? I think he's a viable option now. We saw Burkhead with nice usage in week one. He carried the ball 18 times while seeing three targets through the air. And now there's no Burkhead to potentially take away goal line work. I would assume that Sony Michel sees a lot of looks when the Patriots get close to the goal line or at the goal line. They just haven't run a single rushing play within the opponent's 5-yard line this year. It's hard to not like Michel moving forward. There are only two bodies in that backfield, and we know New England is capable of turning things around offensively, especially with Julian Edelman returning next week and Josh Gordon getting to know the playbook. The real reason you'd want to sell Michel right now would either be because you're afraid of his knee issues that I talked about earlier, or you just don't think New England's offense is going to be good this year. Those are two things, though, that I wouldn't be overly concerned with. And that's why Michel makes for a good RB2 from here on out, and James White could be really sweet moving forward as well. This next question is from at a corny WHT guy. Hey JJ, can you explain in-depth success rate? So last year I did a podcast on net expected points with NumberFire's chief analyst and creator of the metric, Keith Goldner. It's episode 14 if you guys want to give it a listen. But I'll do my best to quickly run through things right here, right now. So net expected points and any other expected points model looks at how many points are expected to be scored at a given yard line and down in distance. So let's just keep things really simple and say that when it's first and 10 on the 50-yard line, the expected point value for a team on offense on that drive is 3. They're expected to score 3 points. On the next play, a running back runs the ball for 10 yards, picking up a first down. Now it's first and 10 on the opponent's 40-yard line, and your expected point value on that drive has jumped to 3.5. That half point in expected points is credited to the running back and that team's running game. And since it's a positive play, it's deemed a success. Had the running back been tackled for a 3-yard loss, the expected point value on that drive might have fallen to something like 2.5. And again, these are all made-up numbers. I'm just trying to make it simplistic for the podcast. But with a 3-yard loss, that's a failure because the expected points on that particular drive dropped. And it dropped after that play. Passing is more efficient than rushing is, so naturally, passing success rates are higher than rushing success rates are. We may see a passer with a 50% success rate, but that's elite for a running back. Most running backs, according to NumberFire's model, hover in the 38 to 40% range. So that's success rate, and it's a cool way of showing how a running back is performing because it's not skewed by big runs. This next question is from at Raznor. Could you please do a segment on Amari Cooper? What's his ceiling, floor, and should he be dropped? I'd have a hard time dropping Amari Cooper in most formats just because we know there is some sort of ceiling. We've seen that ceiling. It's just that it hasn't been consistent, and that's a huge issue for fantasy purposes. Here are my main issues with Amari Cooper right now. Derek Carr has one of the lowest average depth of targets in the league, which isn't a good thing for fantasy production. But then Amari Cooper has a sub-17% target share so far this year, and he's not being utilized close to his opponent's end zone. He doesn't have a red zone target this year. Those are really bad signs. Like, even if Amari Cooper's target share rises, then he also needs to start seeing more looks in the red zone. And even if that gets better, he's still in an offense that's not pushing the ball down the field. So that will limit his ceiling. His floor has become pretty obvious and it's basically non-existent. Amari Cooper's floor is the same as your floor and my floor. It's being held catchless. Like, that can happen for any receiver in any game, but the likelihood of it happening for Amari Cooper is much greater than for someone like Antonio Brown. I mean, look guys, Amari Cooper has fewer than 10 yards receiving in 6 of his last 15 games. His floor is as bad as anyone else who's seeing any sort of volume in fantasy football. So where you're at with him, unfortunately, is that you can't trade him because no one wants Amari Cooper right now. But you also can't start him. He hasn't proven to be a consistent, reliable fantasy asset. So you've just got to kind of sit him on your bench and look at him as a flyer. That's just the logical approach right now. This next question is from at SniperJones13. 12-team standard scoring trade, I lose Buck Allen and receive Sony Michel. Would you do it? Yes, I would do that all day long. Like I said, Sony Michel should see plenty of work now, and he should hypothetically be the goal line guy for the New England Patriots offense. Buck Allen's been living off of touchdowns to start the year. And while it's because he's seeing a lot of work there close to the end zone, his touchdown number is still going to regress. In fact, in my weekly column called The Report that you can find on numberfire.com, if you guys check out the last couple of tables in that column, it shows touchdown regression for running backs and receivers based on their yardage totals. The dude who has overperformed the most this season in the touchdown column at running back is Buck Allen. He's scored 4 total touchdowns when his yardage total tells us that he should have close to 0.5 touchdowns. That's the largest discrepancy at the running back position. And it tells us that even though he should be okay moving forward, given how he's being used, there's still going to be some touchdown regression coming. He's an easier sell candidate in a standard league too, given he's utilized heavily as a pass catcher for Baltimore. This next question is from at the John Wanner. Can you give some insight on how you think the 49ers running back situation will play out without Garoppolo? I have Breida and grabbed Morris off waivers as soon as I saw the news on Garoppolo. Am I overreacting? Should I drop Morris in favor of other higher upside players? I definitely like Breida more than Morris with the Jimmy G news, if that's what you're asking. I mentioned this on my 15 Transactions podcast this week, but CJ Beathard targeted running backs on over 36% of his passes last season. That's an insane rate. Starting running back Carlos Hyde averaged 8.3 targets with Beathard under center and 3.8 without him. That easily plays into Breida more than Morris. Morris has really just been a touchdown-dependent early down back for San Francisco. And now that they're going to be in more negative game scripts, he's really not all that valuable in fantasy football anymore. That's just what happens whenever you lose a starting quarterback like this. Touchdowns are going to be a lot harder to come by for the 49ers. This next question is from at Zombie Token. Can you help explain the optimism and high perceived value of Jordan Howard, and do you agree with it? I haven't necessarily seen crazy optimism surrounding Howard, so I don't know where his overall stock really is at. But if you want the positives for Howard, it's that he's currently 7th in the league in rushing share at the running back position, and he's also 20th in target share. That combined is really strong for a running back. The downside is obviously that Mitch Trubisky has looked really bad to start the year. He just doesn't look comfortable. And when you've got poor quarterback play, a running back won't be set up in favorable positions as often as we'd like. The thing is, guys, running back is really bad after the top handful of guys. Howard would then be in the group after those players because he's seeing work both on the ground and through the air, and we know he's the goal line back. I wouldn't ideally want him as my RB1, but he's a strong RB2. This next question is from at Gino G. Hill. Why is Peyton Barber not producing with such an awesome passing game and the lion's share of snaps? Is he just that bad? Is he droppable? The Buccaneers aren't getting any push, that's why. Right now, Peyton Barber has a 23% success rate, but Jaquizz Rodgers has a 22% rate. And the Buccaneers rank dead last in Football Outsiders' adjusted line yards metric. Anytime someone asks if someone is droppable, it always depends on the type of league that you're in. But I can tell you that before last week, I sent Barber to the waiver wire in one of my leagues. A big piece of it is how ineffective the team has been at running, but Barber also only has 4 targets this season. It's not like he's able to make it up as a receiver. This last question is from at FBX Fantasy. Will Kenyon Drake turn it around? His usage has been very minimal in great matchups. There are a lot of things going on that are hurting Kenyon Drake so far this year. He's splitting work with Frank Gore. That's the most obvious thing. And as a result, Drake has a lower rushing share than LeGarrette Blount, Isaiah Crowell, and Jordan Wilkins, just to name a few guys. And he's actually had a lower success rate than Frank Gore himself, which is never a good sign. And then that low rushing share looks even worse because Miami's run the second fewest plays in football. And then Miami's also only run 1 goal line play, and it was a pass. So I think it's just a bad situation to start the year. But I will say, given his 16% target share, I think you can be a believer in somewhat of a turnaround if you're not a believer in the Dolphins being as competitive as they've been. Because if and when they're in a negative script, they'll be forced to be more pass-heavy, and Drake could be the dude benefiting from those situations. But he's not someone I'm heavily buying right now, given the Dolphins are undefeated, and usually significant change doesn't happen for teams who are winning. That's it for this week's questions, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And if you could leave a rating and review of the podcast on iTunes, I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Make sure you're following me on Twitter as well, at LateRoundQB. That's where you can ask questions for any future mailbag episodes. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy week 4.